Hello, and welcome to the China Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Austin, and today I am joined here with my good friend, Ed.
Hi, Austin.
How you doing?
I feel wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So, things are kind of clearing up a little bit in China for us, and we are both chilling in Chengdu, which we've been in for a while. I believe you were here for the extent of the pandemic, correct?
Pretty much, yeah. I was here when it started, for sure.
All right. Cool. And for a lot of us, this has been kind of like the period of time that gamers have been preparing for. We get to work through backlogs. We get to, you know, spend a lot more time just focused on gaming without any other distractions. Has it been relatively good for you as far as gaming goes?
Well, I do feel as though I've been training for this time my entire life, but there has been some technical difficulties which have stopped me from maximizing the amount of time I could have been playing games. So when the pandemic started, I had recently moved house and had to prepare that house, you know, make it livable or whatever. And I also didn't have Wi-Fi when I moved in, and that took months to remedy because, of course, no one could come anywhere near anyone else for such a long time.
That's kind of a pain in the ass. I also had technical difficulties. I had two computers crap out on me, like stuff that just inhibited things. But I mean, I'm fucking loaded over here with just consoles and like anything I could want. I've been able to kind of make it work, you know. But I mean, no Wi-Fi is kind of a bitch.
Yeah, it was, but I can still use my phone as a tether in most cases. But if you're trying to download anything from Steam using your phone as a, you know, it can be a bit of a nightmare. It can take a very long time.
It can be costly, right? You've got to buy a bunch of extra data. And
fortunately, I had upgraded my data plan just before the pandemic. So, I mean, I still got up to the, you know, close to the cap of 60 gig in a month. Like, that wasn't too difficult when you're spending all of your time playing games and watching movies that you're downloading from there.
Yeah, now that is garbage, though, for online play, right? Like, you basically can't do extended online gaming.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't even really do any online gaming when you're using your phone as an adapter. So until the pandemic kind of relaxed a little bit here and I could get someone in to install my Wi-Fi, I wasn't able to do any online gaming.
Right, and you also had a computer crap out on you a bit during this time, right?
Yeah. Well, same as you. It crapped out twice. I had to reformat the whole thing, and then the graphics card crapped out after that and had to have it resoldered. So, yeah. And also recently, within the last week, my power supply fucked up as well.
It's a shame. It's a damn shame. So, you have not really been able to maximize use of your Steam library or really any computer necessities, basically, that would have been prime time to be using right now.
Yeah, for the first half, definitely. So right. I used the Switch to begin with. A friend of mine has quite an extensive Switch library, so we exchanged our logins. And so I was able to play a lot of those games instead of going through my Steam backlog.
Right now with the Switch, with, you know, sharing libraries like this, it can be a bit of a hassle, right? It kind of requires basically a constant online connection just to verify that, I mean, if you're playing on Ed's account with his games that are installed there, the games won't be accessible to you if you are offline for that long. Am I correct?
3 hours. So every 3 hours you need to check in, and the system will remind you when the 3 hours is coming up. So what I would try to do is take it. So to not interrupt each other's playtimes, if you're both using it, you would sign in, verify that you can play the game, and then turn on airplane mode. And then you have 3 hours until you need to change it again. The problem is that it will remind you that the time is coming up, but taking it out of airplane mode and connecting to the internet isn't enough for it to automatically do it, so you can't have seamless play. You will have to exit the game and revalidate it to keep playing. So it
sounds like garbage.
Well, yeah, I mean, it can interrupt your playtime, but when you have access to someone else's library, it's not too bad for that.
It's nice, but I mean, so I play on PS4, and you know, I have several friends who do this. A lot of us on PS4 happen to share libraries, which is like pretty easy. The console is stationary, you know, it's not a portable console. I mean, you could in theory be moving it around all the time, but you need a monitor and all of that. But what you do on the PS4 is you can sign into an account and activate that PS4 as the primary PS4 for that account. Then any other user, which you could have, you know, a few dozen users on an account or whatever, all of them on that PS4, all of the users on that account, however many you have, can play those games. Now, if you go offline or whatever, yeah, it's kind of a hassle. I mean, I've had issues where even games that are my games purchased, I run into issues where, like, let's say for Mortal Kombat, right? I was doing a CGF event a few weeks ago. I did a series of Mortal Kombat events, and I went out to the venue and brought my PS4 and this and that at Rob's, and tried to play the games, all the data, everything's on there. Game was fucking locked. Could not access my own game. Now, I've got my primary account, like my primary PS4 is somebody else's PS4. We share libraries. And this is Charlie. You know, sometimes one of us purchases another game. I know a buddy of mine who shares with his brother, whatever. You know, you can do that with, I mean, technically it should be, you know, family sharing or whatever. Let's pray to God so that Sony's not listening and, you know, just decides to fucking end all of this, you know? But, you know, it would not allow me to do that. I had to connect to the internet. Once I connected to the internet, everything unlocked. No problem. But, like, it's fine. You don't think about it. Whatever. Like, on the and whether or not you're online, offline, whatever, or you are offline and you log in online, no problem. I know with Steam that if you have family sharing enabled, that if somebody else, let's say like my sister wants to play, you know, something and, you know, we're sharing accounts, that if she's playing something on my account, she can play it no problem. But then if I log onto the account and want to play something, it'll give her like 15 minutes to get off, basically.
Steam is a lot more strict with that. When I've shared my account with people back in the UK, especially with the two-factor authentication. So what I would do is get them to sign in together and say, you know, let me know when you're signing in. I'll give you the code, and then save the credentials onto the computer and then go into offline mode. And then if they've downloaded all the games that they want to play beforehand, as long as Steam is operating in offline mode, sometimes that will require, you know, unplugging the computer or turning off the wireless adapter. Then they can play those games as much as they want, as long as the credentials are saved. Right. Going back to the thing you said about the PlayStation, can you use your phone as a hotspot to connect PlayStations if you're, you know, out in the sticks and still want to use someone else's account?
Yeah, I think that would be fine. That would be fine. But I mean, the main thing is, like, some of it doesn't really matter. So, like, it depends just whatever account that game is associated with, you know, and what accounts are activated as primary on that one. Like, let's say you are going out into the boonies or whatever. You could, in theory, I believe, activate a PS4, or you just don't want to play online, be connected, you could activate it as a primary and then just disconnect it from any internet connections, and then potentially activate another PS4 as a primary. And I don't think it would affect it. It may or may not, you know, but my point being is that it's a lot less intrusive than what the Switch appears to be, you know?
The Switch is, it can be, I mean, if you're on a long flight, this is where the problems start. So as long as you have access to any kind of internet connection, like especially if you go abroad. So for the first month and a half of the virus, I was in China, so it was no problem to connect to my phone's hotspot. But then when I left, when the virus had kind of calmed down for a bit, I felt like I wanted to go on a bit of a holiday. So I went to Malaysia and Thailand, wondered whether, you know, if the Switch was going to be a problem because I had to sign in every 3 hours. But if you're spending any kind of time in a location and you get yourself a good SIM card, you can just hotspot your phone and connect to the Switch wherever you are. They've got great, you know, cell phone coverage, so you can still be on the beach playing a game, you know, if that's your thing, or up a mountain, or in, you know, some kind of tiny little cabin in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
If you've got a cell connection, then you can sign in to the Switch. And you've got it for 3 hours, so it's not too bad.
So you were here for quarantine or whatever, for the onset of the pandemic. And then you left. You left China. But obviously before there was a ban on foreigner entry here. So you did leave for a period of time during the whole global pandemic.
Yeah, for a couple of weeks. So for the first month and a half, I was in China. I was in Chengdu when we had no idea what the virus was. I mean, we still kind of don't right now as of recording this. But we really didn't know anything then. But it calmed down within China after about a month and a half. Things kind of relaxed a little bit, and I decided I'd go for a little trip for a couple of weeks. And the Switch worked perfectly using the SIM cards to hotspot it. It was great. The only problem is if you're on a flight for longer than 3 hours, but from China to Malaysia to Thailand to back again, it was no problem at all.
So, like, basically just traveling during that you were like, oh, this is great, sharing libraries is awesome, but being on flights and stuff was somewhat of an impetus for you for wanting to actually go ahead and crack your Switch, correct?
Yeah, I mean, if you're anywhere without an internet connection for longer than 3 hours, then you're going to need another option to play games.
Which happens, you know, and those are the times that you generally would want your Switch the most.
Oh, completely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I can feel that. Hopefully cracking your Switch is something that will happen in the near future. You asked me to help you and we ran into some hiccups, so we'll see whether or not that can pan out. I hope it does, but yeah, cracked Switches are fucking awesome. They're great.
Every electronic item I own misbehaves, so it's no surprise that there's problems doing this as well.
Great, great, great. That sounds like a blessed life that you live. But yeah, so tell me about your experiences gaming this time. Do you think that the virus has impacted your experience with gaming in any substantial way during this, you know, period of time?
It's been nice to be able to reconnect with friends and family living in different parts of the world, because everyone's in quarantine, so everyone has all of this free time. They're all off schedule, so I've been able to play a lot of games with people that I haven't spoken to or been quite close to for quite some time, which has been really great. So you mentioned the PS4s and being able to share libraries. So my plan is to find an old PS4 somewhere, and then I can share libraries with my friends. And I also want to be able to play some games with my cousin and my brother, who are back in the UK as well.
Cool. So it's more been a desire of yours to play more online now, just because you see more people. You haven't actually really been playing much online during this time.
No, not. I mean, my brother and I have been playing quite a bit of Vermintide 2.
Oh, cool. That's like kind of similar to Left 4 Dead or something, right?
Pretty much a reskinned version of Left 4 Dead, except you have to chop Ratman's heads off.
Which sounds pretty stellar to me, man. I mean, fuck the Ratman, am I right?
Oh, wait, I mean, I've killed thousands of these guys now, but, you know, it's quite traumatic. There's a lot of them. They're very close. It's very visceral.
It sounds good. I mean, and that does sound comparable to, you know, Left 4 Dead. There's just sometimes, you know, hundreds and hundreds of zombies swarming you, and, you know, you've just got, like, fucking zombie bodies, like, slumping up against walls, blood and guts everywhere, you know, like, chomping off heads with a machete and, like, shotgunning holes through their chests and shit.
Yeah, I'm almost ashamed to say that I got very adept at chopping off rat heads with a hellbed.
With a hellbed,
yeah. Okay, cool. I didn't know I had it in me until then.
Yeah, and you recently got a mace, right? Which...
The rat men are coming, and when they arrive, I will be prepared.
All right, cool. So, all right, you've been playing Vermintide 2, doing a little bit, or 2, right? The sequel?
The sequel, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been doing a little bit of that online with your bro, and any other multiplayer games or, like, you know, things that you find yourself doing more of with online connectivity during this time?
Other than that, not so much at the moment. I've really enjoyed playing some single player games at the moment, using them instead of human contact while in quarantine. Playing Doom. I've recently bought Doom Eternal, but I was playing the 2016 version.
Had you played it before?
Yeah, but I hadn't finished it because I didn't have a good keyboard and mouse setup.
Right, you were just playing on a broken keyboard and using a trackpad, right? No, I'm just kidding.
I wish I was that good to play any of them.
Like one of those old mouse ball things. And
I actually had one of those lap pads, the Razer Turret, I think it was. It broke after like a year, but when it worked, it was great. I mean, it's a tiny little mouse and a keyboard that goes on your lap, and the battery is basically the mouse pad at first. It feels very strange, but you get used to the
feeling.
With a decrease in scale. You have a smaller area and a much smaller mouse.
Yeah, I got you. I haven't seen one of those, so I'll have to look it up, or you can show me later.
I can show you my broken one, yeah.
Yeah, if you want. I'll just see it to get an idea.
Yeah, you can touch it, feel it, see.
Touch it, feel it, rub all over it, that kind of stuff.
It's absolutely filthy, yeah. I should clean it beforehand.
I probably shouldn't rub all over it then.
But I came back to Doom 2016, which was giving me my dopamine kick. It's an incredibly satisfying game to play, stamping on demons' heads.
To say the least.
So, you know, that gives you kind of like the rush of being alive. And then for the kind of like the emotional depth, I was playing Disco Elysium.
Oh, so, I mean, I've heard so many good things about that game. I think it's one of probably... Last year's releases, that's probably one of the top releases that I haven't gotten around to that I really think I absolutely need to play in the near future. It just sounds amazing and, you know, unique and different from so many other games out there, the way that you can interact with things and stuff. And I don't know, man, it sounds like a really cool game. So had you started that during or... you know, before or after things kind of were in motion?
It was towards the tail end of the quarantine.
And you beat it?
I did. I did beat it, yes.
Does it warrant multiple playthroughs?
Oh, definitely. I think every playthrough you could have a completely different experience.
That's cool. Now, how would you describe Disco Elysium to someone who hasn't played it?
Well, most video games are power fantasies. You know, I mentioned Doom earlier or Mortal Kombat. Where,
or even Halo or so many games where you're just this, like, uber powerful, you know, like, demigod basically just fucking wailing, you know, going through. You're a super soldier, you know, in all of these things where you can just do, you know... things that the average human being could never do. Things that would definitely decimate, you know, even some of the top soldiers in the world, you know. And you're just like breezing through it like, you know, no problem. So Disco Elysium kind of goes against the grain and doesn't make you that kind of super soldier.
Yeah, well, as I was saying, most games are power fantasies. This game is more of a humiliation simulator. Like, you are constantly being humiliated and crushed and embarrassed and
so there's failing. Like a lot of moments where it's just like talking about the size of your dick and you're like really feeling emasculated.
The size of your dick, the size of other people's dicks. There's a lot of dicks in it. There's a lot of everything in it. And I'm a big fan. I thought it was, you know, I played through half of it, almost, you know, the character was an ongoing mental breakdown. I felt I was having a mental breakdown, shaved all of the characters' facial hair off, you know.
That's weird.
I couldn't go back to the game for a few days. It was
real
kind of emotional adventure, you know. You have to be in the right frame of mind to go through it.
It also, I think I heard somebody in the group mentioning something, you can, like, become a character class or something that can, like, communicate with objects or something, I believe.
Yeah, you can kind of communicate with the remote viewer's district. So you're a very sensitive. You can choose to be a very sensitive character who is, yeah, you can interact with objects. You're interacting with, you know, you're having almost visions of, you know, whatever. I wouldn't want to spoil any of
right,
it.
Right.
It really is something that
you
needs
need
to
experience.
Be played, definitely. And the way that you play it will be very reflective of who you are as a person as well. Or maybe not at all. You can completely go in this humiliation fantasy in whichever direction that you want to. But it's wonderful.
That's cool. That sounds like something worthwhile. Cool.
And so that provided the kind of emotional depth that, you know, not being able to see people provided. So between Doom and Disco Elysium, it was felt like I had a whole bunch of friends with me.
Right.
Torturing me.
I mean, yeah, that sounds, well, I don't know, not necessarily like optimal quarantine interaction, but you know, I mean,
depends,
you know,
what you're into.
Whatever, masochist. So, you know, some people get into that kind of stuff, and that's cool. I want to experience that. For me personally, part of my escape was I, you know, spend a little bit of time kind of just diving into VR games a little bit. You know, I was getting back into Subrat a little bit. I got into Astrobot, Rescue Mission, stuff like that. And that was just kind of nice to me, being able to, you know, every day being in the same surroundings and everything, being able to kind of immerse myself in another setting, you know, which, I mean, it's great if you've got this strong narrative or something like you're describing in Disco Elysium, can be really, really a good form of escapism that might be much needed for a lot of people during times, or I don't even want to say times like this. It's not like we really have times like this, but you know what I mean. And being able to strap on a headset and just get out of the physical space that you've been in, you know, day in and day out, and have a little, you know, a little bit of respite from that, and be able to put yourself somewhere else and just forget about all the crazy shit that's going on in the world for a few minutes is really, I think, really awesome. You know, I mean, I think we are in a period of time that more than any other time in history that is, you know, better equipped to cope with the hardships that would come with something like this. I can't imagine what, like, 100 years ago with, like, the Spanish flu or something, things would have been like for people then. You know, what are you doing? Just, like, reading a book all day or something, you know? And if that's still, you know,
yeah,
only so much.
Suck.
Well, you know, each to their own. You know, I mean, I enjoy reading. You know, I don't read as much as I used to, but it's definitely, reading a good book is rewarding for sure, but it definitely doesn't offer the same kind of thing that strapping on a VR headset does, or being able to, you know, put on, you know, an earbud while you're playing, you know, a single player game and be able to chat to your high school friends, you know, just about life. While, you know, as if they were in the same room with you while you're just playing a game or something, you know, That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Can a book transport you to a completely different place?
Yes.
Can a book simulate fighting a troll?
I mean,
choose your own adventure?
Yeah.
I'm not sure they had those 100 years ago, so.
Yeah, I don't know. That probably was, I don't know, maybe around the 50s or 60s.
I would enjoy a choose your own adventure of Moby Dick, though.
Why is that?
Oh, we'll talk about that later.
All right. Leaving the viewers out. All right. So, what other kind of game? You said you were playing a lot of single players games for obvious reasons with your, you know, internet issues, computer, all of that shit. So, what other games were you playing during this period of time? Tell me a little bit about what games you were playing and why you were playing them, how it affected maybe how long you were playing games or how invested you were in them. Did you play games you normally wouldn't have played? That kind of stuff. Can you get into that a little bit?
I was still playing a lot of roguelikes. I love roguelikes probably for the same reason that I enjoy Disco Elysium, because they're similar to that kind of like humiliation simulator. You know, you're being punished for being a fool and making bad decisions and sucking at video games. So I really enjoy playing a lot of those. I was going through Nuclear Throne again.
Yeah, I started playing that again recently too. Yeah.
I love getting so close to the throne and being defeated.
Have you beaten it?
No.
I haven't even gotten to the throne, man. It's such a punishing game, you know? I mean, especially in the later levels when you get to the Crystal Caverns or whatever the fuck you want to call that shit. Like, it just turns into like complete bullet hell. Like, I mean, it's madness, dude. So someday, hopefully, but it's still fun as fuck, man. It's fun as fuck.
Don't forget the throne does exist.
And yeah.
Someday. I do enjoy, so with these games where there's, you know, very little to zero narrative, that you can overlay your own narrative on top of these things.
Yeah, for sure.
So with, Disco Elysium is obviously heavily influenced by Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. And there are other games in this series, such as Icewind Dale, which is
highly regarded.
Yeah, much more combat focused, a lot less narrative focused. So you can then overlay, and you create your entire team as well. So you can overlay your own narrative onto these characters based on the way that they fight, based on the way that their tactics work in the team. And I've kind of found myself slowly going insane and doing that with Nuclear Throne as well.
So what kind of stories have you been putting into Nuclear Throne? Because there's literally no narrative in that. You know,
it gives you little hints, such as steroids. The big muscly guy who has two guns, it tells you in one of the loading screens that he used to be a scientist. So kind of imagining his past life and this guy who wanted to be a jacked up, dual-wielding monster.
He was like, done being a nerd. You know, I'm done. Maybe someone bullied him too much and he like, you know, injected himself and turned into this crazy ass fucking muscly dude that's just hell bent on revenge or something.
Or he was almost exactly like that anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
And he was, you know, kind of like a Dwayne the Rock Johnson type, but a scientist as well. And he's slowly, you know, gone mad and just, you know, wants to crush, kill, destroy in the end of the world.
That's cool.
He foresaw this disaster, but no one would listen.
That's cool. I think you also mentioned playing through some single player games with a girl that's been living with you for a period of time.
Yes, during the quarantine, I was with somebody, and they had just discovered video games, you know, as a concept.
Right.
And the first one that they had ever tried was Breath of the Wild. And
a hell of a first game to kind of get into.
Yeah, it's really set their expectations way too high for all other video games. Now all other games basically are trash compared to this one, because in Breath of the Wild you can
do anything.
You can do anything. You can solve any problem any way that you want to solve it, and the game just lets you. It's so, you know, it doesn't so much teach you how to play it. You just learn through playing it anyway. There are features of it that, you know, you could spend the entire game not knowing until you just stumble upon them.
For sure. I mean, I think there are aspects of the game. I played for, I don't know, probably over 200 hours or something. I played for a good, you know, maybe 60 to 80 hours, I'm guessing, I don't know, 40 to 60 hours, something like that, on the Wii U. And then the dog chewed up the disc, and I said, fuck Wii U, sold that shit. It was like, it's time to upgrade. And I was like, I'm not going to buy this again on a console that I'm you know, finishing up with. I was like, it's time to upgrade. Justified my Switch purchase. Started over again on Switch, playing on normal. Thought it was easy but fun. And Charlie actually encouraged me to play on Master Mode. It's like, if you're going to play again, you know, even though I hadn't beaten it before, I had basically beaten it, you know? And he's like, if you're going to do it again, do Master Mode. And it just, it changes the whole experience.
Completely.
Yeah, and I love Master Mode. It kind of, you know, like, just shoves it in your face in the plateau, you know, with a Lionel in the plateau. Like, everything, just, it fucking makes it a stealth game, almost, you know, for
portions. Survival as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You're way more aware of, yeah.
But struggled with how hard it was at first. I almost wanted to play on a, because I knew the game. I was like, I can crush this. It fucking, it felt satisfying. But it was just much more like due to being kind of pressured into it a little bit. I didn't cave. I was kind of back and forth, and then I was like, okay, just stick with Master Mode, do it, and it's so much more rewarding.
Did you feel as though you improved as a player from doing it with that steep learning curve?
Yeah, I think so, but eventually it does kind of hit similar plateaus as you do on, you know, normal mode, but, like, the onset of the game is just, you know, so much more enjoyable and diverse than it is in regular. But, I mean, in the, you know, like, 150 to 200 plus hours or whatever that I've put into the game, you know, in multiple, you know, times of playing, starting the game out and playing through it and stuff and exploring everything, there are, you know, things that I'm constantly discovering for the first time. Above and beyond that, there are areas of the game that I know about just through general discussion with friends about the game that I've, like, what is that island? The island, there's an island you go to and have, you know, your gear stripped from you.
You have to fly out over to it from a
cliff. Or sail there or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. But, like, you know,
There we go. We have two different ways of getting to that same island. It's like, oh, you must fly there. Oh, no, you can sail there. You know, or you can swim there.
I mean, I've never been there. Eventide Island, I think, is what it's called. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard of it and never been there. You know, there are, you know, like, things that, you know, it's just so cool to be able to have such a diverse landscape and a set of experiences and have everybody be able to play it differently, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the absolute joy of it, that you're never penalized for any choices that you make in the game. And every time you play it, it's something completely new. Even just backtracking the way that you came, I mean, it's a real masterwork of design that everywhere you go, there are all these little areas that catch your eye and draw you in. It's a true masterpiece.
So you weren't actually playing, though. You had this girl playing it for her first time and kind of one of her first deep forays into gaming.
Yeah, pretty much any game.
What was it like for her? What was it like hanging out with someone, kind of introducing them to this world? And as a huge Zelda fan with a Sheikah tattoo on your arm, you know, this is probably kind of somewhat of an ecstatic experience for you.
Oh, it was fantastic, yeah. I mean, I tried to be as hands-off as I could be completely, because you really don't need to help or teach anyone how to play this game, because it does it itself. So you can just watch someone learn it. And it was like a real kind of gift to be able to see someone who had zero experience of playing games, didn't understand, like, you know, the language of video games, you know, something that people talk about, you know, where what you're supposed to do and how you can interact with certain objects. In Breath of the Wild, you know, as we've already said, you can do anything. So to see someone approach it with completely fresh eyes and to absolutely love it, to be utterly obsessed with it, you know, falling asleep with it still in your hands, this kind of level of just absolute passion for this world and exploring every single little bit of it and, you know, finding everything and collecting everything and talking to everyone. It was really beautiful.
I mean, she was probably doing things that you never even thought of to do. As like a conditioned gamer, you probably encountered situations where you just kind of automatically did certain things that just felt natural to you, that to her, with a, you know, without having, you know, like seen, you know, you're like, oh, that's an explosive barrel, just fucking shoot that and it blows up, as opposed to someone who's kind of like, well, you know, I'm gonna wander in there and then, you know, oh, I'll use this like fire staff to fucking fight these guys, and then getting into an explosion and knocked off a cliff and like flying into some area potentially that you've never been in or something. She probably found a lot of, you know, weird situations or potentially tackled challenges in ways that you didn't even consider.
Oh, completely. Yeah. You know, you kind of think that, oh, you're going to take the most direct route to solving any of these problems. And then you watch someone else do it who hasn't been conditioned by playing other video games with, which have a much more narrow scope. So sometimes you can watch and be like, okay, this is a bit more of a long way around, a bit more of a, you know, interesting and creative way to solve a problem. But yeah, no, I learned a lot as well. There was lots of like shorthands that I hadn't picked up on and different ways to like save time and to fight more efficiently. It was the cooking especially, like there was a whole bunch of recipes that had completely eluded me.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. And did you have her play any other games?
Oh, no. Well, it was impossible to get her to play anything until she had absolutely finished everything in the game, doing all of the Master Sword
right,
trials.
Right, getting all 999 Korok seeds.
Not that far. Not that far, definitely. But then afterwards, introduced her to The Last of Us.
Okay.
As the second one, there's been some controversy over the release of that. I have a PS3 with me, and it's something completely different. And then playing through that, a completely different experience. She felt so constrained by that game.
Saying, it is somewhat linear.
I want to go
linear
over there.
Experience.
I mean, it's completely linear. It's basically tricking you into thinking that you're not walking in a straight line when it's almost entirely a straight line.
Yeah.
And so she'd be, you know, trying to backtrack and look in different places. And it was, for that game, you know, almost entirely fruitless. There's no point turning around.
Right.
There's maybe some extra resources, but, you know, if you're playing it on an easier difficulty, you're probably not even needing all of these extra
right.
Bullets and you know, rags and whatever it is that you need to collect. So, it was very frustrating.
Why are you scavenging for rags in a world that clearly has like window drapes, linens, and stuff? Why do you have to scavenge for rags?
And there's so many other bottles that you're not allowed to throw.
Yeah,
well. It's outrageous, so unrealistic. But the problem was having to listen to the story as well as getting used to this very constrictive gameplay.
So the story was engaging, but the gameplay felt limiting to her. And as a non-gamer, she kind of, you know, loved Breath of the Wild and struggled, like, kind of having her hand force.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the whole time. So you're, you know, wanting to go and explore somewhere else while someone's trying to tell you some deep and interesting thing about their backstory. And it's like, oh, I want to go and climb this tower or go through that door or see what's going on over there.
For sure. I can relate to that. I was like deeply immersed in Breath of the Wild, and I had heard so much praise for Horizon Zero Dawn, which I have and I intend to play maybe in the near future after I get through Kingdom Hearts. But I remember a buddy of mine asking me to check it out, and I was like, the combat's cool, isn't that? I was like really disappointed with the lip syncing animation and stuff, and then was like a little bit turned off just by the environment of like, you know, like, why can't I climb up that little ledge or something that I could definitely get to, you know? And like in Breath of the Wild, there would be no question of that. You know, the only question would be like, oh, well, I don't have enough stamina. What if I like make a, you know, like cook something that gives me a boost in stamina and then I can probably get up there or something? It's just a question of like, how do I get there? Not like, can I get there?
Yeah, this was a big problem with The Last of Us as well. So it'd always be, well, I can climb up here, but why can't I climb over there?
Right.
And the answer invariably was always, because it's not yellow. If it's not yellow, don't bother with it. And when you're playing it as a, you know, an experienced gamer, you think, oh, this is a very unobtrusive way of showing you which way to go. But for someone who is used to being able to go absolutely anywhere, it feels, you know, very arbitrary to be like, oh, only the yellow places is where I can go.
For sure, for sure. Well, you know, that's like still a really interesting experience. It also had to be weird for you just kind of as an observer, which I think sometimes can be an enjoyable experience, you know, especially like just introducing this stuff to somebody. It sounds like as an observer, watching Breath of the Wild was really rewarding. And for both of you, you know, as an observer and a player, The Last of Us after the Breath of the Wild was a little bit frustrating. As good as it is, it, you know, was so polarizing in terms of, you know, that kind of stuff. And maybe it's just not her kind of game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you were saying, so watching somebody play Breath of the Wild with no video game experience is, it's fascinating. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's amazing to see someone like try out all these different things and, you know, do things in completely different ways. And it's a real fun experience for both of you. But watching the same person with very little experience now playing The Last of Us, you're almost having to manage their disappointment with many elements of the game because it's like, no, you can't do that. No, also this.
Right, right.
The game's not, it's not going to accept you doing that. Like, you have to do it in this very specific way.
I feel you. I feel you. Well, still sounds pretty, I don't know, kind of enlightening, you know, just to watch that kind of experience. All right, so we're kind of wrapping up on time here. Is there anything else interesting that you kind of went through during this time period? I mean, obviously that, like, you know, just experience definitely came from, you know, kind of being in quarantine together and stuff, and that's a very cool story to have. Is there anything else you'd like to share about your experience during this pandemic?
I had loads of time to decorate my new house, and now it looks totally sick. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Cool. Well, you have to show me your place sometime.
For sure.
All right. Cool, cool. Okay, well, that is all for today's episode. And if you enjoy listening to China Gaming Federation podcast, we have more episodes on our website, or you can search us on your favorite podcasting app. If you want to check out the website, it is chinagaming.org. All right. Until next time, take it easy.
See you later. It ain't easy being cheesy. It ain't easy being cheesy.